This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Well, hello everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to another episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. You know, I was thinking about something that happened to me, something I kind of went through in high school. I was on the chess team. I mean, good nerdy thing. And the advisor for the chess team was also the special ed teacher at our high school. And so I spent a lot of time in the special education classroom, you know, practicing different chess moves and things like that, and got to know a lot of these kids. And some of them had some really profound difficulties. I got to know them. They were nice. We, you know, they were friendly. But that was, for me, that was always the picture I had when somebody said special needs. And it wasn't until later on that I realized, you know what, there's all kinds of special needs. And some of them, you know, some of them are not immediately apparent. And sometimes they're people that really are very talented, gifted individuals in other areas.
Well, and that created a problem in our family.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had it in my head what special needs looked like. And I had a child who was struggling to learn to read. I mean, I tried every phonics program out there. I tried everything. Nothing took. Mm-hmm. One day he could sound out a word and read it. The next day it's like it was in Greek. And he'd say his stomach hurt when he was reading, that his head hurt when he was reading.
I think he said, oh, come on, he's just faking that.
I thought he was old soldiering because I knew this kid was smart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was constantly coming up with business ideas and talking about the world, and he could talk to an adult like an adult, even though he was like 6 and 7 and 8.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he was smart. And I could not imagine how a kid that obviously smart, that obviously put together, could have a learning disability. It just seemed impossible, Al.
And yeah, we did. I mean, we had our own struggle there. And it wasn't until we started to realize just the dynamic that was working in his head that we started to understand how we could be better parents to him and better teachers to him.
Well, I had to get past this idea that special needs and learning disabilities necessarily meant someone in a wheelchair or someone who couldn't learn at all.
Right.
You know, who was nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
I had to understand that learning disabilities, learning glitches are a huge wide spectrum of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn that there was something called twice exceptional.
Okay.
And that is that somebody can be, you know, can have learning differences on one end, they're gifted.
Uh-huh.
And have learning differences on the other end of the spectrum that they're struggling to learn. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's nothing new.
It's sort of like occupying both ends of the bell curve, isn't it?
Well, and what I didn't know back then is that's really not unusual at all.
Well, you know, as we've learned more about it, we've realized that there are people who have, you know, diagnosable serious learning difficulties who have gone on to be outrageously successful individuals. You know, we know of several business executives that have had very successful careers, and yet they struggle with attention deficit disorder or dyslexia or some other kind of thing. I mean,
so just within our area of acquaintance.
Right.
I have a cousin that has severe ADHD, mm-hmm. and yet he's an executive in one of the top publishing firms in the nation.
Right.
You know, my brother is a super successful entrepreneur that lives in Shanghai, severely dyslexic.
Mm-hmm.
But we can look at history, and Thomas Edison was sent home from school. They said, oh, he's uneducable. We'll never be able to teach him anything.
He's hopeless. Yeah.
He's hopeless. He wasn't hopeless. He was gifted. You know, Leonardo da Vinci, they believe was dyslexic. He has reversals all the time in his writing.
Yeah.
And spelling errors.
Yeah. And he kept all his notebooks backwards. He wrote everything in like mirror image. And So really, we're coming back to this thing. You can be both brilliantly smart and a struggling learner at the same time.
In fact, often if you're at that very super gifted end of the spectrum, you will have learning difficulties. Many people do.
Mm-hmm.
For example,
mm-hmm.
Patton, the general.
General George S. Patton.
He
That's right.
Barely got out of West Point.
And yes. And you know what? Vice President Nelson Rockefeller, the vice president under Gerald Ford, he was very dyslexic and was very open about it. He said, you know, hey, I've got to write my notes big and I've got to write them in broken sentences because I can't, you know, I can't stand at a podium and just read down this. And so, you know, this is something that's, you know, I realized, you know, a good illustration for me is if you've got an Olympic class weightlifter, he's a power lifter, he can pick up the back end of a truck without even grunting. But because of a birth defect, one leg is shorter than the other. He has to wear corrective shoes and something, you know. And you look at that and think, well, has he got a disability? Well, I guess. I mean, if his goal was to be a figure skater or an Olympic, you know, runner or something, that might be difficult for him. But for what he's really gifted at, it's not. He can compensate for that. He can wear the shoes and he can do all the stuff that he's so awesome at. And his disability is just something you compensate for.
And sometimes the disability even is in their area of giftedness, but they're able to overcome it. For example, Agatha Christie, the mystery novelist,
mm-hmm.
severely dyslexic and dysgraphic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Her notes for her novels were so badly written and the spelling was so creative is what she called it, that her editor had to spend hours with her on the phone just trying to figure out what the words were. And mm-hmm. yet, she's
one of the most successful novelists in the English language ever.
Ever.
Or, oh goodness, I was just thinking of another one that was like that. Oh, William F. Buckley. Mm-hmm. You know, William F. Buckley, who basically the founder of the modern conservative movement and conservative politics, William F. Buckley was, I don't think they ever diagnosed him in that way. I think he was a voracious reader, but they said his handwriting was absolutely atrocious. And his secretary said when they finally got a computer, they thought, wow, no more having to decipher his handwriting. And then she found out, she said, his handwriting was bad when he was typing. It was terrible. That there really was something going on there that he just didn't put letters together in an orderly, predictable fashion, even though he was a brilliant thinker, a brilliant speaker, and led a political revolution in our own country. So, all right, so we're coming around to this. Well, what do we do with this?
Well, I think about two of our kids that have really struggled.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was so smart, I didn't even realize he had a problem until he got to college. You know, I knew that he struggled with writing, with handwriting.
Yeah, but we figured that out when we got him a laptop computer and he could type like crazy.
It wasn't until he got to college and he really started struggling. He was making C's and I knew something wasn't right.
Well, he went to the helpful, you know, the help desk or whatever, the learning people to try to say, hey, I need some help with my study skills or my note taking or something. And they said, well, why? You're making a good solid C's. You ought to be happy with that, right?
And then they tested him. Mm-hmm. And they said he was the most ADHD person they had ever tested. Ever.
This is a huge university with a medical school.
Huge regional medical center.
Yeah.
Most ADHD person they ever tested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he also can read a 400-page book in an hour.
Unbelievable. Yeah, with perfect comprehension. Yeah.
But he struggles with the attention and with writing. He's very dysgraphic.
Yeah.
You know, the son that I struggled so much with,
mm-hmm.
Sam, and I can say that because he speaks about this himself now.
Right.
He's an adult.
Yeah.
He didn't learn to read till he was 11. I thought I was going to lose it.
it was really tough because his older brothers were precocious readers. They read very early.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're thinking, why isn't he getting this? You know, the others, it just saw, like they just took to it. And why is it difficult for this one?
But you know what? He has been super successful. Because he's in college now on a full academic scholarship.
Right.
And mm-hmm. he's on the president's list. That's better than the dean's list.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing great.
Yeah.
He was freshman class president.
Oh, he's a star on his campus. And
but I wish I had known that when he was 10. Because when he was 10, I didn't know if he'd... I thought, how am I going to teach him enough that he can live independently? It was scary. It was terrifying, Hal.
Well, it was very discouraging for you, and it was very discouraging for him. And we're going to talk about that. We've got some resources we want to share with you later. So stick around for the end of the program here. But we learned a lot through wrestling through all of the things that went into his mind, and realizing, well, you know what? This is one of those young people that now we understand he's twice exceptional. He is a brilliant thinker. He's a brilliant communicator. He's very good with numbers. He's great in a lot of things. But if he has to handwrite something, that's difficult. And if he has to read something quickly, that's going to be a difficult for him. And it's, you know, how do you balance those two? What do you do? How do you parent? How do you teach a twice exceptional child?
Well, I think the first part is what we've just been talking about. You've got to recognize that this is a real thing, that it is a real thing to have a really bright kid who really struggles. I mean, if you could see the test scores the first time I tested our son, some things were like 98th percentile and other things were like second percentile.
Yeah.
Huge gap in what he was doing.
And that's so typical in this situation. And actually, he found that very encouraging.
He did.
Because he was like, I mean.
Well, he thought he was stupid. And when we had him tested, he begged me to let him see the test scores. And I didn't want to because I always heard you shouldn't. But I finally gave him, let him see him, and he wept with relief because he said, oh, I really am intelligent. I really am smart. I just have these issues. Well, I'll just overcome the issues. And he has.
Well, that's just it. It's the power lifter with a bad foot.
Right.
And that's actually, it's a good illustration for him because he is a power lifter. He's very good at that. But, okay, so recognize this thing is real, and you may have a very smart child who has a very real difficulty and still needs some accommodation and some help.
And that, I would say that's the second thing. Don't be afraid of labels. You know, I'd always heard, don't label your children. Don't let them be labeled.
Well, you just know how it happened in school. You know, if anybody got slotted into the remedial group, then everybody immediately knew, oh, that's one of the,
can we say those kids.
That's one of those kids, you know, and... And so, yeah, we don't want our children to go through that kind of peer, you know, that peer treatment. But then,
labels are important because, like, if I have pneumonia and I don't know what it is and I never get it labeled, I never get treated. And you know, knowing exactly what was going on with our sons enabled us to help them.
And see, this going back to that first point. You know, it's really important to recognize that a learning disability has nothing to do with intelligence. That's the thing. That's the difference. And that's something which I guess we never have really thought about it, was that it has nothing to do with intelligence or with talent or with future potential. It's just simply something that exists. It's something that you recognize. It's a condition.
Right.
And so that's, well, okay. So don't be afraid of the labels, because you do want to know what, you know, what are we struggling with here? Because you know what? I remember with Samuel, for a long time, we thought maybe it's a vision issue. Maybe it's, we need vision therapy, or he needs glasses. And we tried different things and nothing was working.
And so get testing. That was really hard for me. I really sweat about that a lot. And I had to decide, I've got to know. We've got to know. I don't know what to do next. I've got to get testing. And that was hard for me to make that decision. It felt like giving up in a way, even though it's hard for me to understand what I was thinking back then. But I can remember it. To get tested meant we were getting one of those dreaded labels. And it meant that maybe I was scared I couldn't actually meet his needs. And there was a lot of anxiety fraught with it, and I wish I hadn't felt that way.
Well, what we realized as we went along this path was that there are compensations available. I mean, there's accommodations, there's techniques, there's things that can be done to help your student express the brilliance that God's given them. But there are people who try to abuse that. There are people who try to game the system, and so they'll try to come up with some sort of designation that they have a learning challenge, so they get extra accommodations when really they're not entitled to them.
Well,
see, the reason I bring that up is that's why you need to get it early on, because this is not something that comes and goes. If you've got it, you've got it. You're going to deal with it. And,
yeah, and
getting a test and getting some sort of outside certification of it early on means that you've got a really rock solid case when you need to apply for accommodations later.
Well, I would say at least the school board believes that those people exist who are trying to cheat.
Well, okay.
So whether they exist or not, the school board believes that the college board believes that they exist.
And well, that's
so
what we were told.
So you'll have an easier time getting help if you have some history of testing. But so mm-hmm. Everyone at this point is asking, okay, so when do I test? Let's talk about that in just a minute.
Okay.
Because we need to take a short station break and talk about the Old Schoolhouse magazines.
Because the Schoolhouse
Teachers.com,
they are sponsoring this program, and this episode is brought to you courtesy of schoolhouseteachers.com.
They have over 300 classes that it's a small monthly fee, and mm-hmm. it, there's a huge sale going on between now and the mm-hmm. end of this month. But mm-hmm. they have a small monthly fee, and for that, you can take any number of classes, any number of students. They have over 300 classes to choose from. Mm-hmm. One of my sons had a question about chemistry the other day.
Yeah.
And I was in a hurry, and I just said, okay, let's see if Schoolhouse Teachers had something to help. They did.
They're a resource. It's not like signing up for a course at community college even. I mean, you can do it from beginning to end, or you can just sample and say, hey, I need another example. I need somebody to give me another example of this problem or this chemical reaction, or explain this piece of poetry or literature better.
Or I'm not sure how to teach this subject. Mm-hmm. I wish I could just get somebody to teach it for us on video. It's there. It's amazing, the resource, and it's so affordable.
And it's everything pre-K to stuff that adults would like.
So check out schoolhouseteachers.com. Mm-hmm. We'll be sure to put a link on our show page too.
That's right.
Okay, so the question, when do you test?
Okay. When would you recommend that?
First of all, you don't really need to worry particularly about reading until a child is 8 or 9. If they're not getting it by that stage, you probably want to do some testing. Mm-hmm. Just to find out where you stand, because there's a wide range of what's normal in reading.
Oh, boy. And see, this is one of the traps of the whole Common Core type of structure that says, okay, your children, everybody should be able to read by the time they're 6, and we want our children to be ahead of the world, so we're going to try to teach them to read when they're 5. And you know what? That's developmentally, that's getting down on the cutting edge of what's even possible.
Well, there a very tiny, tiny, tiny number of kids will read when they're 2.
Yeah.
And a very tiny, tiny, tiny number of kids will read when they're 13. The average is probably mm-hmm. 6 or 7.
Yeah.
But if you're going to teach reading before that, the vast majority of kids aren't going to get it. They're just not going to be developmentally ready.
Yeah. And so if 6 or 7 is average and you've got a child who has a bit of a struggle, then maybe 7 is not really early enough to worry yet.
No,
maybe,
it's not.
Maybe 8, 9 perhaps. If you get to be 9 and they're still just not getting phonics at all, they can't remember the alphabet, or there's something they're really, really, really just, it's not clicking.
Then it's good to get testing at that point. Definitely, though, get testing as they're entering high school. And the reason for that is accommodations.
Right.
Now, I struggled with this too, Hal. I thought, isn't it unfair if I let him dictate his essay instead of writing it out?
Well, see, okay, yeah, because that's an example. When you say accommodations, what does that mean? Okay, that means like if you have a student who is dysgraphic, he has a very difficult time with handwriting, or dyslexic, they have a very hard time with reading under pressure and reading at speed, then an accommodation might be they have extra time for reading, or they get to dictate rather than they handwrite essays.
Or you read them the passage or read them the problem and instead of asking them to read it themselves.
Okay. And see, this is important because those kind of tests are not typically checking to see how fast can you write. They're not testing your handwriting. They're not testing, you know, what they're testing is your knowledge in a subject, and the writing is just the way you're communicating it.
And so what you want to do is you want to level the playing field. Just mm-hmm. like if you have a child who's born unable to mm-hmm. use one leg,
right.
you would immediately buy them a brace so that they could walk. In the same way, giving accommodations is just leveling the playing field, allowing them to use the gifts that God has given them in a way that they can express
Perfect.
What God's given them.
Exactly.
Now, it's important to test them going into high school because you need to be a, you want them, you don't know if that child is college bound. Now, listen carefully.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when one of our kids was 14 and I was mm-hmm. thinking, I hope I can teach him enough to fill out an application at McDonald's. At this point, I'm not sure I can.
Mm-hmm.
At 17, that same child was reading Ancient Philosophers for fun.
Mm-hmm.
At 19, he was in college on a full academic scholarship with all of his professors saying he was the best student in their class.
So really important, don't sell your student short and don't cut off that future.
Yeah.
You know, don't give up when they're 12. Say, oh, well, I mean, that's just not,
yeah.
you know, because you don't know. So much happens those teenage years.
So get them testing going into high school so they can get accommodations mm-hmm. on the SAT or the ACT. And get accommodations in college if they need it.
Mm-hmm.
One of our sons is in college. He's getting accommodations. They hire kids to take notes for him in college.
Mm-hmm.
They let him dictate his essays if he needs to.
Yeah.
He's allowed extra time on his test. And you know what? He's doing great. And all his professors love mm-hmm. him to pieces. So don't cut your child short. Give them the accommodations they need.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge thing for us, Hal. Because when I realized that giving him accommodations wasn't cheating, but mm-hmm. it was making it more fair, then he began to win awards for
yeah.
things that he was doing. And
right.
and that gave him courage and encouragement that he didn't have.
Now, a big part of this is you are going to have to be your child's advocate.
Oh, you're going
to
have to.
You need to get your own understanding of their condition, and you need to find what kind of resources are available and tap into those. And you're going to need to be Mama Bear. You're going to need
yes.
to be Papa Bear. You're going to need to go in there and say, look, I've got this son. I've got this daughter. They are brilliantly smart. They can do this work. They have a problem that I need you to accommodate.
You need to say they have a learning disability.
Oh, you use the D word. You have to do that?
You have to, because mm-hmm. if you use the D word, then that clues people in that they must help you.
The D word, the D is the middle letter of ADA.
The Americans with Disabilities Act.
The Americans with Disabilities Act, which has really mandated that these accommodations be available and that students with disabilities are going to get the help that they need. And so, you know, it's important. If the system has granted you this, you can claim it with a clear conscience and without apology and without any sense of shame.
Well, just like the Apostle Paul,
mm-hmm.
when he was dealing with the government, he said, I'm a Roman citizen. You can't treat me that way.
And then when he talked to the temple leadership, he gave out his credibility as a rabbi trained Jewish student and scholar. And so, you know what? Look at your situation and say, hey, I'm going into an academic world. I need help from the academic administration. I'm going to claim my rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act.
And so you're going to need to do that. And that means you may have to go to his Sunday school teacher and say, please do not call on him to read aloud.
Yeah.
That means you might need to go to her co-op teacher and say, she is not going to be able to complete assignments in class.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to need to kind of keep an eye on that because there are teachers, and I'm not talking just the old school teachers. I'm talking about younger teachers, too, who sometimes think, well, they're just being lazy. Well, that's just not, they're smarter than that. You know, you're going to have to educate them. You may have to do it many times.
And there are just some people who cannot grasp, just like I struggled to, cannot grasp that someone so smart could have an actual learning disability. One of our son's professors last spring was that way. He said, oh, come on. You're clearly too smart for this. Well, no.
Well, it's like, you know, if you've ever suffered with a gym teacher who's never been sick a day in their life and they've never had anything that was too hard for them to do physically, and you present with asthma and they just think you're just lazy. And, you know, that happens too. Okay, so you're just going to have to stay on top of this on behalf of your child because you know what your child is capable of.
Yes.
And you are your child's best advocate. Nobody else cares as much about your child and their future as you do, parents. And so go ahead, get on that horse and go into battle for them.
And teach your kids not to be ashamed. You know, by showing them all the brilliant people, like the ones we talked about the first part of the show,
mm-hmm.
that have struggled with these same issues, you can encourage them not to be ashamed and to advocate for themselves as they get older. You know, we've got our sons away at college. he has had to advocate for himself. Mm-hmm. In fact, he told me just yesterday, he said, next semester, first day of class, I'm going to go to my professor after class, explain my disabilities, mm-hmm. and make sure they're willing to work with me before I stay in that class.
Yeah.
And so, you know, be an advocate, teach him to be an advocate. And as much as you're able, it's probably a good idea to stay away from the public schools' help, because they have a huge financial incentive in your child being in their school.
Yeah, and we're not saying this to throw mud on the school system, but just simply to say the reality is that there's a lot of government money that flows towards special education programs, and sometimes there's a real incentive to put a tractor beam on these students and get them into the network. And so much of this, particularly when you're talking about a twice exceptional child, so much of this you can do perfectly well at home. You don't have to have, you know, professional certification to do a lot of the things, even a lot of the basic therapies you can do at home. Yes. And so just be aware, sometimes there are services that you need, but really, really, really consider carefully what the total cost might be to your family.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there is mm-hmm. help available. You know, the Homeschool Foundation helped us when we needed to buy some expensive testing. They yes. have a special needs fund. You can seek out their help.
And you know what? The Homeschool Legal Defense Association has an entire struggling learners section that help parents who want to teach their struggling learners at home.
Now, let me talk for just a minute before we go about some of the things that really helped us.
Okay.
We used with our son Sam, Diane Craft, and with one of our younger children mm-hmm. who has struggled some, Diane Craft's materials.
Okay.
Her brain integration therapy manual, her reading program mm-hmm. Was a huge help, because Diane clearly recognizes that there are smart kids who struggle to read mm-hmm. and that you may not be able to afford to get out and buy thousands of dollars worth of therapy. So her materials taught us how to do the brain therapy that we needed to do at home very inexpensively. Mm-hmm. And we have that on our site. Mm-hmm. You can go to raisingrealmen.com/shop, scroll down to the struggling learners section, and mm-hmm. you can see what we've got there.
Right.
We've got her materials there. Mm-hmm. Also, Samuel and I did a workshop together mm-hmm. about, one day he came to us and said, Mom, you and I need to write a magazine article. This is when he was in high school. I said, really, why? He said, you know, I talk to the kid, we meet people out when you're speaking, and they just don't understand what their kids are going through. We need to tell them about this from the kid's perspective. I said,
wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we wrote an article, and when he heard what people said in response to the article, he said, okay, we need to do a workshop. So Samuel and I did a workshop called Surviving Struggling to Read, mm-hmm. and he's doing it with me, and he talks about it from his perspective. And yeah. how to maintain hope and courage during those difficult years when all your friends are reading and you're not.
And this is really good, because he's very self-aware, and he's very thoughtful even as a young child. And, you know, you got a child who may be 8 or 9 and struggling with things, and they may not even be able to tell you this. But this is from the perspective of a 13, 14, 15-year-old who's coming out of the hopelessness of it, and to say, you know what? These are the things that we did that helped me make it through.
And so we'd like to give you that workshop free, because I want anybody that needs it to hear it. Mm-hmm. So if you would go to raisingrealmen.com/smartstruggle.
All one word?
All one word, no caps, smart struggle.
Okay.
Then you can enter your email address there and get that free and listen to Sam. And I encourage you to listen to it with your child, because I think it'll encourage your child to hear what Sam has to say about it and to know that, you know, he's been super successful in college mm-hmm. and just to give him some hope, because mm-hmm. it's really hard to be that child. So head out there. We've got a lot of resources out there, raisingrealmen.com/shop to find our struggling learner section.
Right.
raisingrealmen.com/smartstruggle. Mm-hmm. to get that workshop free. And we just really want to thank schoolhouseteachers.com for sponsoring our podcast today.
Can I give one more little plug here? We've
sure.
got a good friend who has dealt with a whole range of special needs in her own family, Heather Laurie. In fact, she's got a whole website and everything called Special Needs Homeschooling. We want to encourage you, go out and check her out, her materials. She's the author of a book called Homeschooling when learning isn't easy. And Heather is a special lady. She's got a really special family. She's doing wonderful things with her kids. And she can clue you into a lot of these resources and accommodations that you need to know about, too.
Head out to our show page at helenmelanie.com/radio for links to all these resources.
That's right. This is episode 184, if you're listening to it sometime down the road. So come back to helenmelanie.com/radio and look for episode 184 on Smart Kids Who Struggle, because that's what we're talking about.
And if you would like to support us on an ongoing basis, go to patreon.com/HelenMelanie.
Yes, please do. We'd love to have you there. So, look, it's about time to wrap things up here. So we thank you for joining us and hope that you'll join us again for the next episode when we talk about taking biblical principles into the 21st century family. Until then, I'm Hal.
I'm Melanie.
Thanks for joining us.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.